phone. Already told him not tonight. He ain't trying to hear no. Said he's fiending for another taste. Said he's on his way to my place. Pull up to the crib. My heart skips a beat. Right in front of my house. Dude is sitting in his jeep. As much as I wanna be mad about it, I'm really feeling him now. How he's hawking me.
And I love it so. Somehow it turns me on. If the truth be told,
this dude is sweating me. Cause I love.
I'm
Peace and love, fam.
You are listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio.
And it's presented like a jewel.
Enriching, encouraging, and engaging our youth. Here on iHeart Radio. With influential guests such as Susan Taylor.
We're a community in crisis. And we have to step up. We have to stand up. We have to speak up. We have to work together.
Jasiri X.
And then because we have Facebook and Twitter and we're able to share this information, the information is getting out there more.
Dr. Julia Hare.
Because we live in a racist society and you can get arrested, black boys, for walking while black, thinking while black, driving while black, at anything you're doing while black.
Dick Gregory.
I can go and tell you why this program you have is so beautiful. That one, truth don't never have to be validated by ignorance.
Exactly.
But ignorance will never validate truth.
This is It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio. Tune in every Friday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on WWWEAM 1100 on iHeartRadio.
Let me hear now.
1100Atlanta.com.
And so again, I said, you know, what you're doing is very important. And a lot of times when you do shows like this, you must have people listen, get a tape recorder, or make the tape available.
Hit us up on the hotline at 404-603-8770.
And now,
Jeff Hodges.
What's good, everybody? How's everybody doing? Welcome to another edition of It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. You know what we have, those higher infinite power, healing our people type conversations. And I'm your host, Jeff Hodges.
This me, Kia Baby Doll Jeffries in the building.
And tonight we got a real special banger for you.
Oh,
you know
goodness.
That. You know that. In the building with us, a very special guest, New York Times best-selling author and a critically acclaimed documentary filmmaker, Tariq Nasheed.
What
good,
is
fam?
Going on, family? How y'all doing?
All right, all right.
Yay!
Definitely yes. A pleasure and an honor to have you.
It's my pleasure to be here,
no
fam.
No doubt, no doubt. We are definitely fans of you over here at the show.
Yes.
We're definitely loving what you're doing, how you empower the people.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
And we about to learn a little something about you blowing over there, singing.
Yeah.
Doing
yeah,
thing.
So talk about
I'm
that.
I'm trying to get my Peebo Bryson pop.
I see that.
That's another one. That's who you are,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
going through
was,
the list. Yeah.
So we got to talk about
yeah.
this music. Okay,
yes,
so.
Ma'am. Yes.
You know, I'm a musician as well.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
and
indeed.
I was watching the videos. I was listening to the music. Very nice.
Thank you
like,
so much.
No doubt.
You know, of course, it's shocking to some
yeah.
of us
yeah.
that you do music.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I'm calling you kind of like a Alexander O'Neal, Orange Juice Jones.
I can take that.
Kinda, and now that you said Peebo Bryson, I'll put
yeah.
that. My mom would probably
yeah.
say Peebo. Very feel good, very mm-hmm. kind of sexy grown. I mean, ladies, gentlemen,
check
he's
it out.
Got some,
Mink Slide.
Some stuff. He's got some nice grooves.
Yeah,
what's up?
The group is called Mink Slide.
Mink Slide.
And we did an album that was paying homage to the 80s and 90s sound.
Okay.
I wanted to do something that actually sounded like a record that was made in the 80s because those records, those songs are timeless. You can put those on now. And they'll still bump, especially the songs from the early 80s. Evelyn Champagne King, you
Come
put on Alexander O'Neal, that stuff will pop off.
No doubt.
Even the songs from the 90s, those songs still pop off.
Yeah.
That we were just talking about, the Acanelli song that you sung on. Put that on now and watch a party go off.
Right, true. Right.
So there was a time where certain music just stayed in a vacuum and it could just lock in and it will resonate throughout generations. And we wanted to create that with the Mink Slide album, and I think that's what we did.
Now, Egyptian muscles official tissue, man.
Yeah.
Definitely was checking you out. Now, we want to know something, man. What's up? What's up with your man doing the electric slide?
What's
going
what's
on? Tell
dancer.
Us about your partner.
Talk about the dude.
Yeah, that's my that's I call that's my Mackish praise dancer,
you
Johnny.
You guys gotta go to YouTube
check
and check out Tariq's
or
videos.
Or go to the show tomorrow
dude.
Night.
Yes, we're doing a concert
yeah.
tomorrow night here in Atlanta,
Atlanta
at Center Stage Theater. So you can check the video out at minkslide.com.
Is dude in, out here with you?
Yeah, he's in. He's here. Yes.
What's up with him?
That's my Mackish praise dancer. He interprets my words.
Did
so
you
he
say Mackish
That's my Mackish praise dancer. When
dancer.
I spit some Mackishness, he will interpolate the words through dance. So
what?
You know, so our vibe is very unique. And I think it works. It's a very unique look and vibe that we have.
No doubt.
Because with my partner Johnny, it looked, we wanted to go for the Miami Vice look. If you look at our single, we again going into that 80s theme. In the 80s themes, you had those buddy cop movies and those buddy crime movies like Trading Places and Lethal Weapon. So we wanted to have that kind of vibe and that kind of energy.
So how long you been doing this singing thing, man?
You know, I was I used to produce a lot of rap records. I used to do a lot of underground rap records, and then I started writing books. But, you know, doing the production, that was a hobby. I turned that into a hobby, something that I did just because I like doing it. And while I was doing my documentary films, I would just do my musical tracks on the side to create backing tracks for my radio show, because I do my podcast, Tariq Radio. And I would accumulate all these instrumentals, and I said, let me put some lyrics over these and just see how it do. And we did it, and we got like 10 songs. And I said, let me put this out and see how it does. And we put it out, and it, our album Egyptian Must debuted at number 12 on the Billboard charts.
Congratulations on that.
A lot of people were surprised. I was surprised.
So you said you produced those songs yourself?
Yeah, I wrote them and produced them, absolutely.
You play keyboards?
I play a little keyboards. You know, I bring people in. I tell them what melody to play. You know, I bring in the guitar players, tell them what to play. Bring in the drummers, tell them what to play. So I try to Quincy Jones the game a little bit.
I'm mad at you. That's the best way to do it.
He did his thing over there.
So did you like write any of your music between the two albums? Did you bring in any collabs, or were there in, are there any people that you would like to collab with?
On the Egyptian Musk album, there's a group here from Atlanta. I flew them out to LA called the APX, and they do the same type of 80s style, 90s funk. They're very, very thorough. They're going to be opening for us tomorrow at Center Stage Theater. There's a lot of people that I want to collaborate with on our next album. On our first album, I didn't want to do too many collaborations, but on the next one, I want to go back and get some of those old school artists. You mentioned Alexander O'Neal. I would like to get Alexander O'Neal and have him on. I would like to get Evelyn Champagne King and have her on. Get a lot of those people from the 80s and bring them back and just spice it up again.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So you are going to give them a show tomorrow here at Center Stage, and tell them what they can anticipate.
We're going to be funking it out. You guys are going to watch a funk party. We're gonna do real R&B. A lot of times people complain about the R&B that's out here. Now, it's not really R&B. It's really people singing over trap music. And I'm not knocking that. You know, trends come, trends go. But we're going to do traditional R&B music. And I thought it was very important for us to take back that traditional R&B, because what's interesting, a lot of young artists from our community, they do the trap R&B, but you have other people from different communities who are doing the traditional R&B, and that's popping off, like the Sam Smiths and the Bruno Mars, the Justin Timberlakes, the Robin Thicke, people like that. They're dabbling into the traditional genres of R&B, so we need to get back into that, too, so we can take back control of it.
Indeed. You're listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop with our very special guest, Tariq Nasheed, is in the building. Check it out, y'all. We're going to give away one free ticket to that show. So that fifth caller, give him that number, Kia. 404-603-8770. Y'all give us that call, that fifth caller. Get that ticket for the show tomorrow. No doubt. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, what's up? This is your girl, Selena Johnson, and breakfast is over. It's dinner time now, baby. Every Friday, live on iHeartRadio. It's bigger than hip-hop radio.
See, we talking about music and doing things going big. Tell them about that concert.
Yeah, so tomorrow at 7 o'clock at Center Stage Theater, we're going to be lighting it up. We're going to have the whole band. We're going to be doing a lot of funk. We got dances. It's going to be real nice, man, and it's very reasonable to get in. A lot of folks are coming already. It's the talk of the town, so I want everybody to go to minkslide.com and get their tickets and come join us.
Yeah, it sounds like a party.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm trying to go. You trying to go, Q?
I'm in the building.
Hey.
I'm going.
Yes,
you know, we're giving away one ticket.
Yeah.
So call us, call in.
Definitely,
you know,
call in.
Fifth caller.
I know you guys have been talking about music,
yeah,
but I want to get into the nitty gritty.
We're gonna do that in a minute. Let's rock this music out. We're gonna get into that in a minute.
I do have a music question still.
Yes. Yes.
I wanted to know: are you like in love with the music, or is it a calming hobby for you? Like, what is it for you within all of these different things that you do?
Good question. Now, I really love the music.
Okay.
And the thing is, I try to do things that I love and make it a hobby too. So
okay.
A lot of times when people think hobby, they think of people just halfway doing it.
Right.
I try to do the best of everything that I do. I'm an extremist in that sense. So when I did the album, I had in we got a real big studio. We got the top musicians in LA. We got the top background singers. So we did it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's more than a hobby. It's
no,
it's something that I love being creative in either way.
Definitely. So out of everything that you have going on, because like you said, you do music, you have a production going on, you know, you're activist of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you have the bigger passion for? What's your favorite? Or is it everything is kind of the same passion?
It's, you know what? It's a balance.
Okay.
Because doing the activism work, especially doing the films, that's real serious work.
Right.
And, you know, the music thing kind of balances my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you're delving into heavy topics, you got to balance your mind.
It'll
drive you crazy.
No doubt.
You dig? And plus, dealing with systematic racism, that drives you crazy.
Yeah,
so you need
absolutely.
Some type of levity. And, you know, that's what I do the music for. So there's passion in both. But I really like the activism. Because I like waking people up.
Right.
You know, I get a passion seeing people empowered. So anything that I do that's going to empower people, I like to do it. Even with the music, there's always an empowerment angle with the music. Our album debuted at number 12 on Billboard.
Mm-hmm.
It debuted, it rose to number one. It didn't debut at number one, but it was number one on Google Play, number 8 on iTunes, best-selling album. Mm-hmm. Our album is independent. That's very rare for an R&B album to be put out independently to do like that. And I want to show people in our community that we don't need other folks telling us what to do and how to do it. We can take control of our projects, make them comparable to what's out there, and make them exceed what's out there, and we can get the same numbers as those in the dominant society. So there's always an empowerment angle that I have.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Now, you definitely need to holler at Karen White when you talk about doing the funk, because she's a big fan.
I love Karen White.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my question is, what made you take that direction going in the funk and cat? Like, where that came from?
Yeah, but that genre, a lot of people, and again, the only people who are doing it are people who are outside of our immediate community.
Mm-hmm.
And that genre still pops. When you go overseas, that's all you hear.
Right.
That's what they want.
Listen, that makes the most money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You go to the UK, you go to Italy, they're bumping Evelyn Champagne King. Alexander O'Neill, speaking of him, he moved to the UK because his stuff was doing so good. He sold out the Wembley Stadium over there.
Okay.
So they really appreciate that funk over there. And that's where I really made the record for, the international market, and it does very well over there as well. But we're just trying to keep that funk alive.
No doubt. Now we're going to kind of peel away some things, then we're going to get to the funk. Because you got a lot of facets to you, like, for instance, being a relationship expert.
Yeah.
Where did that, you know, passion come from, and what are 5 top dating tips?
Yeah, I started doing the relationship expert thing. Mm. And all the stuff that I do because there is a lack thereof.
Mm.
I did the funk record because there weren't too many funk records being put out.
No doubt.
I did the history documentaries because there were no documentaries out.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing the relationship books telling men real game because when I wrote The Art of Mac, and that was my first book, I wrote that in 1999. It came out in 2000. Remember, at that time, you had like Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, these real corny, cool books. You dig? So I said, this don't really work. And people are scared to really chop up some real game.
Right.
It was almost offensive to talk like a dude really talks. Like, hey, I want to go to the club. I want a Mac. I want to spit game. I want to. So I wrote a book unapologetically talking about how to have game, how to meet women in the club, what to say, what not to say. And I put The Art of Macking out, and the book was very controversial at first, but that kind of helped it sell because the book sold like a couple of 100,000 copies. New York Times gave it a great review. I was on all like MTV, VH1, all those shows, and that took off. So I was very passionate about that. And now you asked me what some of the top five relationship rules. Number one, you got to have confidence. That's for men and women. Number two, you got to let your mouthpiece work faster than your physicals. A lot of folks think, okay, I can shake my booty. I don't want to say nothing on there, but I'm going to sex somebody. No, right, it's all about your conversation.
Right.
You got to have a good mouthpiece. Number three, you better be a good listener, too. That's the part of the game that a lot of people miss. You need to soak up what people are saying to you. You need to listen to what they're saying, especially dudes. A lot of dudes, we have a very bad habit of not listening to women. You can learn a lot by listening to what women say. A lot of guys are so consumed with what they look like, they're not really listening to the woman. She's giving him the game.
Okay.
You know? Right. And that goes to number four. The women give you more game than another dude can. You can learn more game from a woman than you can a man. I want guys to really understand
that.
Say
that again.
Say that one more time.
And number five, guys, if you wear the right clothes, you get chose with your mouth closed. Oh, you better know how to dress. Dressing, fly, coordinated, that's like 80% of the deal right there, because your nonverbal language says everything about you.
80% of communication.
Yes, indeed.
Body language.
Mm-hmm.
So who taught you all of this game? You know, you're teaching everybody else the game, but who actually taught you the game?
I learned from a lot of street dudes.
Okay.
When I was in L.A., I'm hanging around with the players and the street dudes and the hustlers and the Macs, and I'm like, let me see what that game can do if I took it out the streets and brought it mainstream.
Exactly.
So I wanted to make the game for the so-called square cats. And I wanted to make it palatable so that people in the mainstream can get it. And that's what I did.
So what makes you so fearless? I saw an interview where you said you were talking about a situation you went through. And you said, I don't want to get into that right this second. But you said that you were not scared to die.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that you were not scared of the police.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us don't have that. We don't know how to even be that fearless. What drives you to be like that, and how do you instill that into your kids?
Yeah, well, you know, and I said that recently because earlier this summer, my house got raided. The SWAT and all those people came to my house because there was some extremists that made a false call and said that there were bombs all around my community. So it was a real orchestrated type thing, and they tried to set me up to get killed.
Right.
The only reason they didn't do it is because my house is in a gated community. The police couldn't get in. The news helicopters flew over it, so they were filming my house live on television.
Nice.
And you can see it online.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was live, so they couldn't just shoot me on live TV and lie about it. So that's the only thing that saved me. I was on live television. Mm-hmm. So they brought me out, you know, went in my house with guns. And then the news came out interviewing me. And they were surprised that I wasn't scared. Right. I wasn't even nervous. And being a person who speaks out against systematic racism, you have to expect that there's going to be a backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to not be afraid of that.
Mm-hmm.
Stokely Carmichael said in the 1960s, the secret to life is to live without fear. We need to really understand that concept.
Say that again.
You don't die. We do not die. Our spirits are just in vessels called bodies. But your spirit lives on. And how you live is how your spirit is going to remain. The Haitians understood that when they launched the Haitian Revolution. That's the thing that made them successful. They got rid of their fear of dying. When they got over that fear, they defeated every major army in the world. And the mainstream media don't like talking about that. I did a whole movie about that called 1804, The Hidden History of Haiti. That's something that people should really study and get a lot of inspiration from. This is why there's a constant attack on Haiti, because they use their spiritual system, which is voodoo, which is not a negative thing. And that's another thing. They make our spiritual system seem scary and negative, and it's not a negative thing. Because when you go over there to Haiti, you see a bunch of people from the dominant society over there trying to learn voodoo and all that, too.
Exactly.
While they got us scared. You understand?
Right, right.
So we just have to get over that fear, because God didn't make us fearful people. We're the first people on this planet, and we should act like it.
No doubt. Now, I've been doing radio for a little while now, and definitely had the opportunity to sit down with some of our most prominent leaders. Mm-hmm. And there's this one particular question I like to pose to them. But the point that you've already done it, I'm still going to pose it to you. Because the question is basically about if you had the opportunity to empower your community mm-hmm. and create a squad, you ain't got the best scholars in the world.
I already got it. I did that.
What was the catalyst to choosing each one of these individuals?
These were all people that I loved and respected. The first person I got, when I started doing the Hidden Colors series, mm-hmm. and when I got the idea, let's backtrack. I got the idea of doing Hidden Colors when I was in Australia.
Okay.
I was in Australia, 2010. Mm-hmm. Me and my lady were there. Australia's a beautiful place, beautiful country, but I kept asking about the Aboriginal people.
Right.
I kept asking about them, and everybody seemed embarrassed. They were like, yeah, they're around, they're here, they're there. And I'm like, why are you acting so funny? Mm-hmm. And come to find out, they've killed most of the Aboriginal people off.
Right.
Over in Tasmania, which is right next to Australia, they killed all of them. It was a complete genocide. So there's an embarrassment over there, and that really rubbed me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like the fakeness of it. I didn't like this whole smiling and this coy attitude. So that really weighed heavy on me that they would do that and then try to hide it. So when I got back to the States, I said, I'm going to do a documentary teaching people about real history, what's really going on out here in the world, these type of genocides that are hidden. Also, when I went to other places, I would see dark black people in Asia and all these other places that you never saw on television. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do a movie about that. Really, I wanted to do a book about it. Mm-hmm. Then I said, let me take it a step further and just do a movie. It was going to be really just me by myself doing it like John Henry Clark did in a movie he did called A Great and Mighty Walk. You remember that? Mm-hmm. He did that in the 90s, and that was produced by Wesley Snipes. Mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, let me take it another step further. Let me bring in a lot of scholars that I love and respect. First person I called was my idol, which was Dr. Frances Cress Welsing.
Oh, I love her.
She literally changed my life.
No doubt.
And she's always been special to me. When I first read the ISIS papers, let's go back to 1993, a drug dealer gave me that book.
Okay.
A drug dealer. My friend said, hey, man, you need to read this. So I got the book. I wiped the cocaine off of it. Right. I read the book. And it literally blew my mind. That just filled in all the pieces that I needed to understand systematic racism. And that took me on a journey right there. So that was the first person I called. When she signed on, bam, I'm there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I started calling all these other scholars, Brother Kaba Khamenei, Shahrazad Ali, another one of my idols. Mm-hmm. And she's in Hidden Colors 5. I'm doing another movie. She's in it. The thing, Shahrazad Ali is vicious. I love that sister because she looks like a sweet old lady. Right. That's the thing that makes her so vicious. She looks so sweet, but she slices. She's so cold. I had to edit a lot of her stuff out and not put it in.
Wow.
Because I know our people. If we go in too much on the dominant society, we get protective.
Right.
We'll start being like, okay, don't do them like that now. We'll get like that.
Right.
You understand? So I had to pull her back. Another person I had to pull back was Paul Mooney. I had Paul Mooney. I had half Paul stuff is on the editing floor. I couldn't put that in there. So the first thing I asked Paul, I said, so Paul, how do you think black people should react to white supremacy? He said, man, if black people were really going to do something about white supremacy, you'll kill every white person today. Okay. All right. Let me bring him back in. Let me bring him back.
Sound like a little Leonard Jeffries.
Yeah. Leonard Jeffries. He's in 1804. But I got some of the best people in the films, man, and people. And they thanked me for bringing them back because they were underutilized.
Right.
There were so many of our great scholars, man, that we should put on the big screen.
That's right. Absolutely.
And make them the celebrities. And now, since they've been in these films, they tour all over the world.
Right.
Everybody gets to see them and appreciate them. And that's the reward for me, seeing them get the shine that they deserve.
You hear the intro to this song, this show. You hear Dr. Dick Gregory.
Yeah, I heard all the greats.
I did a segment where we said Mike up the elders, because of course we need to have that information and definitely be able to revisit it, because it's priceless. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So let's go back to this FBI story.
Yes.
I watched the interview with you on another show that we will not plug because they don't pay us to plug them. I watched the interview and you brought up an interesting point about how, you know, they get threatened when they feel like, you know, there's too many numbers and powers and numbers, especially in a positive way.
Yeah.
So why do you think that is, though?
Because the thing is, they want to dominate us psychologically. That's how you dominate people. You can only dominate them physically for so long. And people in the dominant society, they understand that if we psychologically got ourselves together, we could overtake them if we really wanted to. If we really wanted to. And they know this. J. Edgar Hoover knew this. This is why he targeted black people so much. He knew the threat, especially around wartime when they would train black people. During World War One, you know, right after that, they had the Red Summer of 1919. Black people were coming back from the war, so black people weren't taking all of that racial abuse, so black people were fighting back. Even after Vietnam, remember, the Black Panthers came right out of Vietnam. A lot of those brothers fought in the war, so they were using military tactics against.
Sat by the door.
Absolutely, the spook sat by the door. My brother Greenlee, speaking of that movie, that the movie is based on the book, but when that movie came out, in the blaxploitation era, they put out all these little cheap black movies, and they didn't. They all of them was like, okay, black man get whitey, okay, we'll put it out. They put out The Spook That Sat by the Door, and they thought it was just another get whitey movie, and they didn't realize what was in it.
That joint was profound.
When they realized what was in it, the FBI went to theaters all around the country and pulled that movie. They pulled that movie out. They buried that movie until the 90s. The brother Tim Reed bought the rights to that movie and brought it back out on DVD. Remember Tim Reed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, that brother. Yeah. So
them sitcom shows. Love Boat, a song.
Absolutely. He was on that Sister Sister, all that stuff. So, you know, our knowledge and us understanding military science, understanding warfare, understanding different tactics to protect ourselves, that's always been a threat. That's why they like keeping us shucking and jiving. You know, I do a lot of stuff on YouTube, and I get, like, high numbers, high views, and I get censored on YouTube all the time. Because when you're speaking truth to power, that's going to be a threat. Now, black people on YouTube, you twerking and you making goofy videos, they ain't got no problem with that. They'll let you act a damn fool all day.
No doubt.
But when you start talking about, okay, this is what we need to do to start building an economy, all of a sudden your videos start getting flagged. You know? So that just shows the insecurity that they have.
I know we don't have a lot of time, but I want to touch on certain things. Like, for instance, that drug was known as atrazine that they use on the frogs. Let's talk on that for a quick second. Do you feel that's something that's utilized to break down the black family with this explosion in this gay population?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're talking about that in HC5, too. We're talking about chemical warfare. You know, Dick Gregory used to break down the soy and talk about that a lot. And if you notice, there's a major push by the LGBT community, and there's a lot of racism within that LBG community, and that's what we need to understand. A lot of black people, you're told by them that your sexuality will trump your blackness, and that's not the case at all. We have to understand there were LGBT slave owners. We have to understand there are LGBT police officers brutalizing black people. J. Edgar Hoover was LGBT. Do you understand me? He was a gay black. He was a gay man. He was a gay man. A lot of folks forget that.
That's right.
You dig?
Yeah.
So they have not been a friend to black society at all.
Not at all.
They have a play up there in New York now called Slave Play, where they're acting out scenarios of slaves having sex and twerking with their slave master. They put that type of filth out, and I'm going up to New York pretty soon to really get on that because we're trying to get that taken on Broadway. If they were to do something about the Nazis and the concentration camps and people twerking, they'd burn Broadway down.
No doubt.
So we shouldn't take what other people don't take.
Exactly.
You did.
So I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
How do you deal with, and what would be your advice also, with elders or people that are very stubborn in their belief? And even if we were to try to show them the hidden colors or get, you know, try to get them more of a open their mind. What is your advice? How do you deal with the elders?
You deal with the elders who don't want to get the information by not dealing with the elders.
Okay.
We got to understand not dealing with people is an action.
True.
We have to deal with the youth. That's who I'm concerned with because they're going to be the ones who's going to change the direction of everything. They're the energy and they're the motivation for us.
Even if they're just stubborn, young people, they're stubborn too.
Young people, but young people will experience things that will make them can change direction. Because when you're young, right. you try anything. You right. you know, yeah. you go one way, one week you want to be a doctor, the next week you want to be a stripper, the next week you want to be a veterinarian.
Yeah.
So young people change their mind. They don't get so set in their ways because you don't have bills, mortgages, health care. You don't True. Have all of those yeah. things tying you down. Whereas an older person, you're just trying to get your pension. You don't want to rock no boat. You just want to go to church, smoke you a little something for your glaucoma, yeah. and just be good. But the young people are going to be the ones to get a lot of information out there. They're going to be the new thought leaders, and that's who I focus on. And when we did Hidden Colors, we kept that young audience in mind. If you look at it, the Hidden Colors films, everything goes real fast.
I love it. Yeah.
Real fast, because I understand that we have a music video type of mentality. People mm-hmm. like to see music videos fast. You like mm-hmm. to watch 7-second videos on Instagram and Twitter. So you got to get the information out real fast. Yeah. You can't waste time. You can't drag it out. And that's why so many people gravitated towards the Hidden Colors series.
Why did you call it Hidden Colors?
Great question. The original name was going to be... Secret Negroes.
Okay.
That was going to be the original name. Then I said, oh, that might not work. And then,
marketing.
Yeah, and marketing. And marketing, that might not work. So I had to come up with something else. I got the word hidden, and I'm like, okay, we're talking about, black people and different other races. So then the colors thing popped off. So, that just really stuck. And what's funny, our movies outsell a lot of mainstream documentaries,
yeah,
and they're afraid to acknowledge how successful the Hidden Colors series is. They can't stand it, but what they'll do, they'll bite off of it though.
Oh, yeah,
like that movie Hidden Figures.
Come on now,
where do you think they got that name from? They took that.
I said that as soon as I saw it, yeah. I was like, they stole your joint, man.
Nike, in 2012, they put out some shirts called Hidden Images.
Wow.
With LeBron James, and the shirt, if you can Google it right now, the shirt looked like the cover of Hidden Colors 2.
Wow.
So they had to still, because we're about to sue them, so they snatched them out.
Okay.
We got our lawyers on them. So they watch what we do. We got to understand this as people, black folks. Everything we do is watched and monitored mm-hmm. by other people so they can learn how to appropriate it. So this is why we have to learn how to monetize what we have and own it mm-hmm. and utilize it to empower us.
No doubt. Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about not being put in a box, because so many people, they are always looking and seeing you as the person who brought us the empowering film, Hidden Colors.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they see certain things online, say, for instance, you're going at your boy Mark Lamont, you're doing your thing with the cooning and all that.
Yeah.
And then also with the music and the books titles, they try to put you in this pimp-like sort of kind of element. Talk about that, because at first you had these books and there was none of that backlash.
Yeah.
And it's after Hidden Colors. Talk about that and how that came about.
Yeah, you know what's funny? When I did my books, I was on all the television shows. They were fine with it. I was even on Fox promoting my books.
Right.
And then only after I started talking against racism, then Fox News started attacking me nonstop. Mm-hmm. So, that comes with the territory. And I try not to get put in a box, because I don't want us to think black people who are activists should be just one way.
Right.
All of us should be activists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of us should be conscious. All of us should be trying to empower each other. Because people in the dominant white community, all of them are on the white empowerment tip. They want to be empowered.
Mm-hmm.
All Asians want to be empowered.
Yeah.
When it comes to black folks, they think the empowerment people are the ones with the dashiki and the braids.
Right.
That's the empowerment people, so we're going to be over here acting a fool. Act a fool, but be empowered. Twerk and be empowered.
Mm-hmm.
Other people do. See, we got this thing where we want to be ratchet and don't have a code with each other.
Right.
Anything you do, we can have a code and we can be empowered.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And as far as Mark Lamont Hill and people like that, I go in, because Mark kind of went at me a couple of times. That's why I always retaliate on cats like that. And the thing with Mark Lamont Hill, the issue I had with him is when Dr. Welsing died, he said some disparaging things about her. And I don't play those type of games at all. So,
shame.
Look that up. He made a couple of little slick comments. And, Dr. Welsing's almost like a mother to me.
Come on now.
You're going to get sliced.
When I interviewed him, let me tell you a funny story.
Yeah.
She looks exactly like my grandmother.
Mm.
And when I'm interviewing, I kind of lost myself. And then I had to catch, because she kept that stern face. She was not playing.
Absolutely.
I was like, oh, yeah, you talk to her. Snap up out of that. You over here reminiscing old grandma. Like
exactly. You know, when she died, they were trying to get a little collection for her.
Really?
When when she died, they were like, I got a call. Somebody's like, yeah, we are trying to get different businesses to get a collection for. I said, man, if y'all don't stop, I paid for that whole funeral.
Okay.
You look at the program, you see my name on there. You know, we're not going to do that with her at all. That's not going to happen. She's empowered. Not her at all. She's done too much for us to be passing around a plate. We should be tripping over ourselves to take care of that.
Right. You listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. You know we got in the building Tariq Nasheed. We're going to take a quick commercial break, give you that moment of hip hop, and we'll be right back.
It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio presents A Moment in Hip Hop History with Mocha Brown.
Lisa Nicole Lopez was born on May 27, 1971 in Philadelphia. Lopez was a member of the hip hop group TLC and was known for her brash and unapologetic attitude. TLC was all about female empowerment, and Lopez embodied this totally.
If you can't spatially expand my horizons, then it leaves you in a class with scrubs, never rising. I don't find it surprising if you don't have the G's to please me and bounce from here to the coast of overseas. So, let me give you something to think about. Inundate your mind with intentions to turn you out. Can't forget to focus on the picture in front of me. Do it clear as DVD on digital TV screen. Satisfy my appetite.
The group formed in 91 with Lopez joining fellow members Tion T-Boz Watkins and Rosanda Chili Thomas. In 94, Crazy Sexy Cool sold 11 million copies and featured three number one hits, Creep, Red Light Special, and Waterfall. The album also earned them two Grammy Awards. Tonight on It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio, we salute Left Eye, a pioneer in hip hop. R.I.P. Left Eye. This is Mocha Brown with your moment in hip hop history.
Oh, yes, son, I'm talking to you. Oh, yes, son, I'm talking to you.
Rainbow yesterday, but too many storms have come and gone, leaving a trace of not one God given reason. Because my life is in shades of gray, I pray often fade away, sell the praise for the seven days. And like his promise is true, only my faith can undo the many chances I blew to bring my life to an end. Clear blue and unconditional skies have dried the tears from my eyes.
No, and we back. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop in the building. New York Times best-selling author, acclaimed documentary filmmaker Tariq Nasheed. We talking about that show you're going to throw down tomorrow. Tell them a little bit about that.
Yeah, man. We're going to be rocking it out, man. Me and my group, Mink Slide, along with the APX. Get your tickets at minkslide.com. The show starts tomorrow night. Center Stage Theater at 7 p.m. We're going to do traditional funk. It's going to be a funk party. I'm going to have my Universal Circus glittery jacket on, my gaiters, you dig? Oh, I'm going to be tuned up. I might put a little Beijing in my edges to make them glisten. You dig? It's going to be popping.
No doubt. Now, Hidden Colors, let me tell you, as a mentor working with a group down in Macon, we used to always do a great deal of workshops sharing that information. Mm. I don't know how often you get to hear people tell you what you have done for them by providing that, but you have definitely changed a lot of lives.
Respect.
You have opened minds, and you've definitely given people an idea of what they need to be searching for.
Yes,
because a lot of times we're just in the dark poking around. So salute and thank you for that question. Tell us what we can anticipate from 5.
Man, Hidden Colors 5, we're going to focus a lot on different forms of warfare. We're going to talk about the history of African warfare, where we went wrong, where we went right, where we went left. One of the things we're talking about is how African people, we never had the kind of mentality where we would want to go dominate another person's country or land, because we lived in an abundance.
Right.
We lived in an environment where everything was at our fingertips. We lived in a nurturing environment. We had no desire to take resources from other people because we lived on a continent that had all the resources. So we interacted with people differently, especially people coming in from Europe who were resource deprived. They lived in an environment where they had to hoard things in order to survive. They had to kill in order to survive. So we still to this day don't understand that cold mentality. So we break that down.
Okay.
We talk about medical warfare, which is something that they're practicing on, especially with vaccines. Right. The CDC is down here in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of stories about the CDC mm-hmm. that we need to break down that's going on now. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that their CDC workers, somebody called my show not too long ago. There was this African sister who got adopted by a CDC doctor, and they brought her over here, and they were doing all types of stuff to her. She had to get away from them. We're going to break that down in the film. It's a lot of stuff. The CDC was in the mix of that Atlanta child murder thing.
Okay.
Remember back in the 80s? Yeah.
No doubt.
They were in the mix of that. When you start researching that, mm-hmm. they were investigating. So we got to see what they were, what their part in that was.
Yeah, yeah. That's different.
So there's always been weird stuff going on with that. We're breaking down food warfare. Mm-hmm. They weaponized the foods against us.
Yes.
We got to understand what we eating. They got us eating crazy stuff out here.
Distribution. Yes. Man. Subject to get you some poison.
Absolutely.
The Buddha says so right.
Absolutely. So we're breaking all that stuff down. So okay. It's going to be a heavy one.
When should they anticipate it coming out?
Probably June 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
Summertime.
So, yeah, absolutely. And this one, we got a whole array of people. We got Brother Cabo. We got James Small. We got Ice-T. He's talking about a lot of stuff. We got Chuck D from Public Enemy. Yeah. He's in it. We got Freeway Rick Ross, a friend of mine. He's talking about it. We're bringing
the original,
Rick Ross. Yeah, yeah.
Not, emphasize that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For you rappers out there.
Yes, indeed. So we're talking about how crack got started, where it got started, right. How it was created in a lab at UCLA.
Say
that's
that.
Where crack was created. We're breaking that down heavy.
Okay. You know? Always very informative.
Yes, indeed.
Now, with all these projects that you have already done and the one that's about to come out in 2019, mm-hmm. is there anybody that you haven't worked with already that you would like to work with?
There was somebody I wanted to work with for the Hidden Colors 1, mm-hmm. but the brother is kind of infirm now, so he can't do it, with Bobby Hemmett.
Okay.
I always wanted to work with Bobby Hemmett, but Bobby, the brother, had his stroke, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. I want to catch folks before, you know, they transition, because we got so many legends out here. Our brother Steve Coakley, out of Chicago. I wanted him. There's so many people that I would like to get. Who else would I like to get? Because I've gotten so many people that I...
Where I'm like, you've worked with a lot of people now.
You know who I always want to get, but we keep missing each other, Azra Kwesi.
Okay.
Yeah, that brother's very thorough. Okay. And we keep missing each other. I wanted to get Jewel Pookrum. I love Jewel Pookrum. We kept missing each other. So, you know, I pretty much got a lot of people that I wanted in it, though.
No doubt.
Now, I wanted to know something. You said earlier you leave the elders if they don't want to listen, but you talk to the kids.
Yeah.
So talk to me about how, like, even though a lot of people know about it, a lot of people still don't know about Hidden Colors, mm-hmm. and they're still lost. And how do we get our kids? Like, my son is about to turn 21.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to see, how do I even get him to care? How do we get the young people to want to know this stuff?
Yeah, what we try to do, we show how we market it. We would show little clips on Facebook, little clips on YouTube, and, you know, stuff will circulate and they'll go viral. Then people will be like, okay, we want to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that's one way to do it. Put little 1 minute, because again, young people now are so distracted by so much stuff, you better get them quick. So you use that 1 minute clip to get them, let that go viral, then they're going to be asking to see the rest, and that's how you get them.
Yeah. Because my son is that guy that you talked about, that he got the white friends.
Oh, and Lord. Has,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
my son,
Lord.
You know, he grew him up bougie. Mm, you know, he grew up in Dunwoody when we were in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, you know, nice parts of Queens. He's not, you know, so he feels like he's got his white friends. He probably feels like that doesn't apply to him. He has a basketball scholarship. Like, I need to, you know, we really need to get to these guys, like, and let them know, like, what's up.
Yeah, because the white friends will turn on you big time. That's what brothers don't know. They'll turn on you real quick. Bill Cosby thought he had the same thing going. He had a bunch of white friends, too, side chicks and the whole thing, and they all turned on him. OJ had a bunch of white friends, too. He wasn't black. He OJ.
Say that.
They flipped on him. Black folks are going to have to learn. They will flip on you. You have no friends. John Henry Clark told us, we have no friends.
Okay.
We all we got.
Yeah.
Nice segue. Mm-hmm. Conscious community. And all it is, Hotep and being woke, the being the language of today.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhat in a lot of people's lives, that's the only way we see us as black men. And if you're not Hotepping and you're not woke, do not respect it. What's that all about?
Because that's the box that they try to put us in. We're taught in the black community that black people from certain sectors of society, they got to act a certain way.
Right.
That's the preacher over there, so he acts a certain way. That's the conscious guy, so he has to act a certain way. That's the gangster, so he has to act a certain way. We have to understand all of us are needed. Indeed. We all got to be on the same code. Yeah. Because when you go to somebody in the dominant white society, the crackhead, the lawyer, the doctor, the nurse, the cop, all of them on the same page at the end of the day. They all have the same code, and we need to do the same thing.
Mm. When it comes to your documentaries, what is the outcome at the end of the day? Like, what do you want to be able to say your legacy is when it comes to that?
I want my legacy to show, not just say, but to show that, you know, I put in the work to educate people with the Hidden Colors series. That's going to last for 100 years.
Right.
They teach that in universities all around the world.
Right.
I mean, they show it everywhere. And, you know, that's a hell of a legacy.
Yeah.
And I've done it multiple times. Hidden Colors has been number one every single time it comes out. So this is why I like to venture into new things. I don't like to just stay in one groove. Mm-hmm. When I master something, I look for another thing to master.
Right.
And we got to start doing that. Because a lot of us, we get complacent. We'll master something and we'll stay there.
Yeah.
Black folks, we got a real bad habit of doing that. That's why we want to be the old Negro at the job. It's like the dude 80 years old and got a gold watch and a plaque on the wall. You never got a promotion. So
right.
You got to promote yourself. So that's what I like to do. I like to give myself different promotions and try out different things that I have not done before so I can keep my game crisp.
Indeed.
Well, you said you want to find something new to master. You know, you're doing music, you're an author, now you have these documentary series. So what's the next thing that you're trying to master?
What I'm going to probably do, I'm going to start doing more scripted films.
Okay.
That's one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to try different books. I'm working on a book now that's not a relationship book. It's a book talking about dismantling racism. I'm writing a book called Race Baiter because the media has labeled me a race baiter so much. If you Google right now the word race baiter, my photo comes up.
Wow.
Literally. Mm-hmm. Literally. My picture comes up. So I'm going to own that. I'm owning that. So I'll be that race baiter. Anybody who calls out racism, they call them a race baiter, so I'll be that. So those are some of the endeavors that I have. And also what I want to do, I want to get some young folks and kind of mentor them.
Yes, sir.
So they can be the next thought leaders out here.
That's right.
And that's one of my goals, too, to find some young folks who are ready to get that information in that game so they can rise up.
No doubt.
That's needed in the community. Like I said, as a single mom, it's tough. Mm-hmm. As a single mom, I know I'm not in the mic. I'm little. Y'all got the mics.
Come on a little bit.
All right. As a single mom, it's definitely tough. And I feel you. You know, I'm so glad that you're here. I'm glad that you're doing the series. And
yes.
For you to even do number 5 is crazy. You know, I slept with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I feel like it's a need. We've been beaten in the head with so much BS
yes.
that I got to beat myself in the head with the truth, you
Absolutely.
Know? So I slept with 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. I would like wake up to them and go put them back on, repeat them, rewind. So I love the way that you put it down. Where did you get the idea to make it move like that? I understand you said that it was, you know how you have to reach the youth
yeah.
with the quickness.
Yeah.
But even just the way that you broke it down for us common folks.
Yeah.
You know, my parents went to college, but I'm not trying to get into a whole bunch of, highfalutin talk.
Yeah.
You broke it down to where anybody, your kid, you, the ghetto people, the corporate people, the bougie people, if you wherever you at, you can get it.
And I got that idea from writing books.
Okay.
You know, back in, I think, 1998 or something like that, I tried to read a book by Cornel West. And I love Cornel West.
No,
that's pictures of me with Cornel West. I love Cornel West. But he wrote this book, and the words he was using was so big.
Yeah.
It was like 5-syllable words. I said, bruh, what is this? I mean, it was some long, crazy where I kept having to stop and then get a dictionary to see what the word meant.
And
I'm like,
it makes it tough.
I'm like, Cornel, you showing out right now, Cornel. You're just trying to flex, brother.
Right.
So I wanted to do books where I didn't want the reader to feel like I'm trying to intellectually flex on them.
Okay.
So I wanted to make books very conversational. I wanted people to feel like I'm sitting in a room talking to them, breaking it down, making it simple.
That's what you did.
So I did the same thing with the movies. When you watch the movies, we're not trying to talk over your head. It's just like us sitting in a barbershop and we're breaking down the information in a very simplistic manner. And we're showing you the images while we're talking.
It was dope.
Yes,
no
indeed.
Doubt.
I mean, the way you said, yeah, you know, we good. We get with you now. Can we get with you now?
Yeah.
We did everything you said. I know we got to go.
Again, man, we want to thank you. We want to salute you.
Yes,
it's
indeed.
Been
wonderful.
An honor and a pleasure.
Yes, indeed.
Coming on, It's Bigger Than Hip Hop, sharing
yes.
your
yes.
thoughts. Yo, man, we love you, man.
Man,
and
I love
you. Continue success, man. No
yeah,
question.
Thank you so much.
Tell them about that
you.
Show so yes. they can get that feel, that funk.
Yes, yeah. yes. Mink Slide tomorrow night here in Atlanta featuring the APX. Go to minkslide.com right now. Get your tickets to join us. Center Stage Theater. We're going to be funking it out. I'm going to have on my shiny coat, my
Uh-oh.
Mac and shoes,
Uh-oh.
Hat with the feather in it, the Egyptian musk cologne on.
It's
going to be
a funk party. It's
gonna,
a funk party.
It's going to be popping.
What you no drinking? Doubt. What you drinking?
Man, some cold duck. We got some cold duck. You dig?
No doubt.
Not some cold duck.
Again, man, we thank you.
I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
All right.
Till next time. And y'all heard it, 2019 summertime. Look out for that.
Ow.
Number 5, Hidden Colors. Y'all better come on and check them out tomorrow here in Atlanta as well. He's going to be doing that Mink Slide.
Yes,
come
indeed.
Through, come through.
Yes,
Until
indeed.
Next time, family, peace and love.
Peace
Yo.
And love.
Peace.
Love them.
You are listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio.
And it's presented like a jewel.
Enriching, encouraging, and engaging our youth.
Here on iHeartRadio.
With influential guests such as
Susan Taylor.
We're a community in crisis. And we have to step up. We have to stand up. We have to speak up. We have to work together.
Jasiri X.
And then because we have Facebook and Twitter and we're able to share this information, the information is getting out there more.
Dr. Julia Hare.
Because we live in a racist society and you can get arrested, black boys, for walking while black, thinking while black, driving while black, at anything you're doing while black.
Dick Gregory.
I can go and tell you why this program you have is so beautiful. That one, truth don't never have to be validated by ignorance. But ignorance will never validate truth.
This is It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio. Tune in every Friday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on www.eam1100 on iHeartRadio.
We hear now.
1100atlanta.com.
And so again, I said, you know, what you're doing is very important. And a lot of times when you do shows like this, you must have people listen, get a tape recorder, or make the tape available.
Hit us up on the hotline at 404-603-8770.